Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Full Spectrum Radio. I am Matt, and with me, as always, is Dennis. What's going on, buddy? How are you doing?
And I'd love to have my usual upbeat, charming entry. But, you know, this show tonight, headline I spotted from yesterday. No, I can't have my usual upbeat and cheerful self. I'm doing good, brother. I'm doing good. So, been a busy, busy week. But I do want to throw a shout out real quick. Monday night, I went and met with, and I realize tonight's not a paranormal show, but I'm going to throw a quick one out there. I went and met with actually two awesome families. They're neighbors. They live on battlefield land, not far from my house. They contacted me through a Facebook page that I'm a member of because of activity in their homes. So I went in and did my initial interview with them, you know, and as I told them, you know, some of the questions I asked, there's a reason, even though they sound strange. I just want to make sure you're not batshit crazy. And, you know, of course, that elicited a chuckle out of them. Well, I did, between the two separate households, I did five or six burst sessions, just 2-3-4 minutes, you know, to see if anything came of it. And I'm not going to lie, out of the five or six burst sessions that I did, I got a response on every single one of them. I haven't been able to put it through software yet because I've been turning mad hours with work, but I was kind of surprised just listening through the audio recorder, you know, which doesn't have a great speaker in it. was able to hear something in all of them. One of the best ones was in the second house. The husband claimed that he had heard either a hay or just a long exhale. You know, we've heard that in countless investigations. It's the, he said he had heard it twice in their master bedroom, so I did a birth session in there. I captured it, and it sounded like it was close to that recorder. Those will be up on my SoundCloud as soon as I have the chance. But other than that, been a really weird week, dude. By the way, we have another super moon tonight. I made reference to it in messaging with you. Do you want to go ahead and get into that, or you want to continue kind of shooting the breeze for a moment?
Well, for what the subject matter of the evening is, I guess we can kind of keep the mood a little bit lighter for the kind of upsetting stories that are about to come. Exactly.
Yeah. So we'll do our usual 5 or 10 minutes of just happy banter.
Yep.
On a different note, I met a dude today that has a 2006 Dodge Ram Cummins. Now, I have a 2005 Cummins Dodge Ram. We've talked about it many times that I've been through transmissions. He has 270,000 miles on his and has not been through a transmission yet. So I want to
thank
God
for... Someone
got a lemon. What's that?
I said someone got a lemon.
No, he hasn't been through any transmissions at all.
I'm talking about you.
Dodge. Yeah, I was going to say. I want to thank Dodge for screwing mine up right out the gate. But I will tell you, number four appears to be doing just fine at this point. With 217,000 miles on the truck. Son of a bitch. But
wow.
I did show him my trip computer where it's showing me running about 26.1 miles per gallon. And
yeah, shut up.
Yeah, it kind of blew his mind. So, yeah, that was my entertainment. On a different note, for those of you that don't do construction or that don't play with power tools much, I will give you fair warning. If you are running a impact drill driver and it slips off the screw head and you drive that bit into your palm, it's painful. So, yeah.
Really? That's your PSA for the evening? Don't put a drill bit into your hand?
Yeah, pretty much. That's my PSA for the night. I don't remember seeing that in the instruction manual either. That wasn't on one of the warnings. So I think that's something totally new. Because you know as well as I do, they got a warning for every damn thing on them. So, yeah. How has your week been, my friend?
Week's been good. Been trying to rehab the vehicle. Got a new Jeep top that's on its way. Other than that, just work. Nothing really too much to mention except for what the focus of the show is. I know I talked to you about it. Not actually, personally on the phone. We didn't discuss it. But the whole point of the show was because let me back up for just a second. Dennis and I were going to do this show last week. And it didn't end up working out just between guest schedule and my brother's 40th birthday, which I have to say happy birthday to my brother. He turned 40 He thought it was horrible until I had him talk to somebody who turned 60 and said that they wish that they were 40 again. And it kind of made him feel a little bit better. I created the event for this show on Friday, last Friday. And what I ended up finding out, I invited one of my friends who I've known since I was in fifth grade. Her name is Jennifer Jungle. I invited her to the show in that, you know, you invite so many people and people respond maybe, yes, or it just sits and goes into limbo. Well, hers was sitting in limbo. And I find out on Monday that I sent her the invite on Friday. Found out that she decided to take her own life. She has a 2-month-old child. Her it was an extremely hard thing to see when I was going through the people of who I invited to see her name on there. When I had just invited her on Friday, and on Saturday she decided to take her own life. I mean, that's, her name is still on that list. What I'm wondering is, if she saw it.
That too, brother.
And I appreciate that. But what's really got me bothered by it, did she see that invite? If in fact she saw the invite to it, could it have been something to where she knew she was in that mental state that you and I and whoever else joins us on the show for the evening could have possibly helped her?
You know, I, as it was told to me once before, I guess I'll go ahead and drop the bomb into it right off the bat. When I was 16, my brother chose to take his own life. Of course, being 16, at that time I also had torn ligaments in my neck, so I was in this jacked up thing called a J brace and walked around and looked like a flipping retard for 6 months. Parents decided that they needed to put me in counseling, grief counselors and whatever else. One of the things that I remember them telling me, because I felt guilt over it, in all honesty, I do still feel a tad bit of guilt over it. I was the last one in my family to have seen my brother. I saw him about 10 a.m., and I reamed his ass because he had lost his house key and he woke me up, which, of course, in that stupid brace, I had a rough time sleeping anyway. But I reamed his ass for waking me up to let him in when he didn't even live at home anymore. He was married. He was, living on his own. And I found out about 2 hours later. Strangely enough, I had a feeling that he was around me and he told me goodbye and he loved me and he'd see me sometime. He was nowhere nearby. Found out that night that they had found him hanging in a wooded area. So one of the counselors that I had to speak with made mention that it is believed that once a person is in that state of mind and they have convinced themselves that they are going to do it, nothing really can talk them out of it. It's very difficult once they've reached that breaking point to convince them otherwise. And Wally, yes, it will be mentioned, brother. I appreciate you bringing that up. But I don't know that we could have helped in any way, shape, or form, even if we had done this show last week and she had listened in. I feel sorry for her family, most definitely. I feel sorry that she was in that mental state to begin with. It's got to be extremely painful and confusing when you no longer want to be here.
Well, here's the other thing that I'm thinking. I'm going to her memorial service, which is going to be at, or not her memorial service, but her wake that's going to be at Frederick's funeral home in Naperville off of Mill Street. It's from, I think if I remember correctly, it's from 3 to 7, which is tomorrow. But I haven't got a chance to speak with her husband. One of my really, really good friends was the one who told me about it. I didn't see it in the paper. Well, who actually reads the paper anymore? But well, who even gets the paper? Isn't that what online's for and MSN and all that other crap? But anyway. What I find interesting about it is she has a 2-month-old child. Part of the reason that this kind of hits directly into both categories of what we're going to cover tonight is mental health awareness. Well, a 2-month-old child, I don't know how much that postpartum depression played a role in it. I don't know if she is showing any symptoms, she is showing any signs. This was a girl who, I mean, she loved going to concerts, she loved, you know, hanging out with friends, like hiking, camping, you know, like she was social. She wasn't reserved. She wasn't sit back in her house and talk about, oh, how my life sucks and I have no friends. So that's why I'm kind of leaning towards maybe it was postpartum depression. I don't know the facts for sure. But in all of this, what's really interesting also, I'll say this, and I'm not going to go into detail about anything else, but she decided to end her life by trying to stop a train, which you know that that's not going to be a easy thing for tissue and bone and all that stuff to do. But that's how she decided to end her life. The one fact that I do know, per the police report, which I got one page scanned and sent to me. Since I'm not family, and at this point, it's still an open investigation, so it's not public record at the moment. Her car was 20 minutes away drive time. So if her car was 20 minutes away from where she was found drive time, I started thinking, well, maybe it was more of a homicide kind of thing. But thinking about it, not knowing what mental state she was in, you know, the week before or anything like that, what I kind of scenarioed in my own mind is that she parked her car and was walking around for a couple hours contemplating this, thinking about this, that, or the other thing. That's the only logical scenario that I can come up with as far as if, in fact, it was done by her. Because if it's 20 miles away or 20 minutes away drive time, that would probably be about 2 to 3 hours of foot transportation. So whether she left the house, kind of, you know, like your brother, left the house, kissed her husband goodbye, said, hey, I'm going to work, but just never made it.
And sadly, that's one of the most common questions that people have when a loved one or a near one is believed to have committed, well, I don't even want to use the word committed, is to have done this act. Everybody always questions, you know, did it really happen that way? You know, is it truly suicide? did they actually go forth with it? That's one of the most common questions. Well, the only problem is we'll never know unless some fantastic forensic evidence shows up or some security video footage shows up somewhere. There's always going to be that question in the back of our minds. And I know, it's been 28 years since my brother was found on the end of the rope. And for 28 years, I've still got questions in the back of my mind. Did he do it himself? Was there other actors involved? Was there something else that happened? There are answers that we will likely never know. But unfortunately, it leaves family, friends, and loved ones even more confused, I think, than the individual that has passed when something like this does occur.
Hey, Dennis, real quick, I just saw something pop through on Twitter. Do you want to, last time I tried to screen a call, in the past couple shows, it always boots me off and I have to call back in. You want to check out that 843? I believe I know who it is.
All right, give me just a moment. I'm actually in the kitchen getting another cup of coffee. Do you believe that? I am drinking coffee tonight instead of my normal, simply because this topic is so near and dear to me and it's so important, I don't want to screw it up. So caller 843, stand by just a minute, and I'll be with you to get the board. Now, along the lines of my brother, and we've talked about this one many times as well, Matt, was the young lady, Brittany, that had worked for me. I kind of felt as though she was like a little sister to me. I'd known her for quite a while. Found with a single, what they believe was, self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. The question is still there for me on that one. Did she actually do that herself? But
yeah,
we'll get back to that in just a moment. Let me jump over and check this board. I'll be right back. It's your turn to blab.
Oh, I'm good at that. You know that. So, anyway, yes, Jennifer, I had known her for, like I said, since I was in sixth grade, which puts it probably right around, I'd say, 12 years old? I'm 33 now. So I had known her for a while. She was always very spirited, very awesome, outgoing girl. It's just one of those, people that will definitely touch a lot of people's lives, and it is kind of sad to see that it ended this way. Yeah, I know you're back. Oh, I didn't tell you this. I didn't tell you my new addition, did I?
No.
I got myself a new and improved upgraded tablet. So the board isn't
good.
15
so you can
seconds.
Actually watch.
Yeah, the board isn't 15 seconds behind like it used to be.
That's a good thing. And for those that are listening, what prompted us to want to take off on this tangent for a show? Obviously, everybody remembers a few weeks ago that a fantastic actor, great comedian. I'll always remember him as sitting upside down in a chair and saying, "Nanu, Nanu," Robin Williams. That's kind of what prompted this, the idea to do a show on self-harming, suicide, the thought processes that go on in it. And as I'm getting ready to go on air, I go through and I check my news feed, and somebody had commented, "Another one is gone." TMZ, I don't know if anybody listening is a WCW or WWE viewer. I don't know if anybody is familiar with the name Sean O'Hare, but he was pretty damn good in the wrestling community. I was found Tuesday at his home in South Carolina, found in his bedroom, beside his bed, with a red rope tied around his neck connected to the bedpost. So even somebody that is in top physical health can have mental health issues that need to be addressed. So, I mean, if you have issues and you're even contemplating this, by all means, reach out to somebody. Matt and I have Messenger going for Facebook all the time. Send us a Facebook message. You know, talk to us. If you won't talk to family, talk to a stranger. You know, I've told hundreds of friends and listeners and everything, my phone works 24/7. If you shoot me a message and I grab it, if my phone goes off and wakes me up, I don't care if you call me at 2 a.m. or 2 p.m. I'll listen. Matt will do the same, I know for a fact, because I've done it to him. I mentioned top physical health, and I mentioned mental health. Well, let's talk about some people that have extremely strong mental capacity. They are trained to endure some of the most stressful moments. That would be our military. Right now, the Veterans Administration is reporting an average of 22 military suicides a day. Every day, an average of 22 of our well-trained men and women in the military are so beside themselves with whatever is going on, they decide to take their own life. Now, as important as Obama seemed to think his Obamacare was, I have a better idea than just putting free health care for everybody. How about if we offer psychiatric help for everybody? It's more important to me to deal with the mental health of this country than it is whether or not little Johnny down the street has a splinter in his thumb. It's more important to me that our men and women in uniform who can have a vehicle blown away around them, go to foreign lands to fight for what this country was founded on, to protect us on this land from having somebody else come in on this soil and try to eradicate us, than it is to give free medical care to a heroin addict or a crack addict. Or not everything in this world should be free. Not everyone should have low cost or free health care. But damn sure our military should have all the psychiatric help they need. Right now, episodes of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, are running rampant in our military. And if the VA could get their shit together and offer the support that is needed for our men and women in uniform, I think we could lower this 22 suicides a day. But right now I'm going to bring in our caller. And Wally, that was Dennis, by the way. But you're certainly welcome. He just posted StopSoldierSuicide.org out. So take a look at that, ladies and gentlemen. StopSoldierSuicide.org. But right now I'm going to bring in one of the callers that we have, and this is Reverend Bill Lively. He's out of South Carolina. Reverend Bill, are you with us?
I am.
Hey, Reverend Bill, how are you doing tonight?
Welcome to the show.
Pretty good. A little humid down here.
Yeah, well, that's what central air is for.
No, I'm actually sitting out in my automobile right now in front of the house.
I don't know if I'm going to ask why.
peaceful and quiet for one. You were talking about the PTSD with, you know, the VA. Now, the Charleston VA here in Charleston, South Carolina, they do have a pretty good program on that, and they are treating a lot of the servicemen coming back from Afghanistan and Saudi Arabia. A lot of them do have quite a bit of mental issues over the fact that, you know, you take a person that joins the military, wants to see the world and whatnot, and of course the guys that go into the Marines or the Army, and when they see firsthand, when they're fighting against, you know, whoever they're fighting against, and they kill that person, the majority of them, I would say at least 60-65% of them, that does get into their mind and affects them mentally. You know, here's, you know, a guy, you know, whether it be from the city or the country, he just killed a person. And especially if he sees the gore of what he just did, that sticks with you. And it's a lot of those particular guys that are coming back that have seen their buddies shot up. Of course, them shooting the bad guys, so to speak, and seeing what they did. And it does affect the mind. Even somebody who is totally gung-ho, it will affect. And a lot of them, which you said, are committing suicide. Because it goes over and over and over in their mind. At nighttime, they have nightmares and dreams and of that incident happening all over again. And of course, they can't take it. Now, thank goodness that a lot of them do go, you know, and seek help. And a lot of them are getting the help, but there's still that majority that's not getting that help. That's not seeking the help.
Well, there's a lot of people that I've talked to, and friends that I have in the military that have served active duty, you know, frontline active duty. And a lot of the problem with them is they, for what they've experienced, there's two different things. One thing is what's happened to the general public that supports what our troops are doing in the countries that they're fighting in. You know, I mean, the people have gone through Saudi Arabia, that have gone through Iraq, that have gone through Afghanistan, and they see these families that are just, you know, obliterated by kind of their own people. And it's, you know, they're there to help. And a lot of the vets that come back after active duty refuse treatment because they know that person they're going to talk to try and help them cannot identify with the experiences that they've had. They can't even come close. I mean, if you're sitting down with a counselor and he's like, oh, I understand what you're feeling. No, you don't. So they'll refuse treatment instead of actually try and get treatment for it because it's not on the same level as what their experiences are, what they've seen, what they've witnessed, what they've been a part of.
I would say that's where we would actually need then some of the guys that have been over there that can live with it to actually, I mean, to me it would seem like the government would ask some of the guys that can handle that to get training to be counselors and help those, and therefore, of course, them having the knowledge also, that would help.
Well, there is every branch of the military does, as far as I have seen in the past, does offer a sanctioned people that have been through that experience, that if they were maybe not frontline, but they've been overseas where the fighting's going on, they've experienced dealing with people over there in that environment, that they do set up, and it's every branch of the military, that you can't, but it's not a wide enough span to cover all the troops that were there in every city, in every state in the U.S. Or even over in England with the, you know, Allied troops and everything. It's not just here. It happens everywhere. So, but there are sanctioned counselors that you can talk to that do understand what you're going through.
Good point.
So, yeah, sure.
And a lot of, and one thing that I discovered after my brother's passing, a lot of grief counselors and just counselors in general, if you don't have insurance that will cover it or you can't afford it, a lot of them will actually take you on a pro bono, you know, just come in and talk to us versus the alternative. You know, they would rather gift their time than see another young person commit suicide. So, and that's something that a lot of people don't know. They don't know that they can actually go to them and just ask for help. Virtually any hospital has counselors and therapists and everything on staff, because they have to deal with death on a daily basis. So they have grief counselors there. They have therapists there. If you are in fear of a friend or loved one at the moment, there is most localities have what is called a green warrant. A green warrant gets somebody taken into protective custody for up to 72 hours, where they can meet with counselors and so forth and make sure that they're safe and not a harm to themselves. It doesn't cost you anything, and it just may save a life. All you have to do for that is notify the police that you're concerned about so-and-so, your aunt, your cousin, your neighbor, and they will go in and talk to them. The officers themselves, virtually every police department, they are trained for some sort of therapy or mental issues to, you know, help diagnose. If the officers feel there's a need, they can take them into custody at that point for self-preservation and have them evaluated, and it costs nothing.
I got a story about that one, but we'll get to that later.
I'm dumbfounded. Now, most people think I'm crazy anyway. I'm dumbfounded. Nobody's ever actually, you know, put a green warrant on me just to have me evaluated. But, you know,
That's because your wife already has the I love myself hug me jacket for you.
Yeah, well, she also has the wet hose that every now and again she whips my ass with just to keep me in line. But, yeah, I mean, like I said, in one of the ads that I put out for this radio show, I did something that I don't very often do, and I pulled some of the skeletons out of my closet. I watched my own family get devastated by what appeared to be a suicide. And, you know, like I said, here I am 28 years later, still trying to resolve some of my thoughts on it. You know, did he do this because he felt useless because I reamed his ass that morning and told him it was time for him to grow the hell up? He was only 20 years old. But I did it simply because I was in pain. Like I said, I had torn the ligaments in my neck. was in a brace, had spent time in traction, and wasn't sleeping well. So I kind of blamed myself. At the time, I blamed myself a great deal. And that's certainly not something that my brother would have wanted to do. He was always my guardian. Junior high, I had a kid that was constantly picking on me. I was bullied because I was skinny and tall. Well, my brother was in high school, and the high school was a 15 to 20 minute walk from the junior high. He cut classes to come to the junior high and be there at lunchtime when I went for lunch to see if I would have any issues. And when my bully started his crap, my brother came out from around the corner of a building, whipped his ass, and told him, "You ever touch my brother again, I will be back." That was my brother. He would always have my back. And then on the day that he chose to apparently take his own life, I didn't have his back. You never know what's going through somebody's mind at any given time. If you have the fear or the thought that somebody may be a hazard to themselves, notify the local authorities and ask them to check in on them.
Well, Reverend Lively, I do have a question for you with being pretty much a man of the cloth. Have you ever, well, a two-part question. Have you ever had somebody come to you looking for help in the church?
I don't have a church yet, but I have had people come to me for help, yes.
And what kind of direction do you give them?
I talk to them and feel what the area, the problem area is in their mind, and then start counseling them. As a matter of fact, there was a young gentleman about a couple of years ago. This is before I actually got ordained, and he was dating one of my goddaughters, and eventually they broke up, and of course that pretty much tore him up, and he actually, of course, he also beat up on her too, which is another thing that I do not like, any guy beating up on a woman, whether they be relative or a stranger. If I see it, I'm stepping in. But anyhow, when they broke up, It got to him real bad mentally, and he had put a comment on Facebook. I couldn't remember exactly what it was, and when I seen it, that rang a bell to me immediately. He's about to do something, and therefore I contacted him, and we text each other back and forth a good 8 hours, and getting all his thoughts and whatnot, getting him to open up to me. Of course, I took a little bit of psychology while I was in the Air Force, and also I was a natural psychologist to begin with, especially child psychology. But I started talking to him and watching, of course, what I say, because you can get a opposite reaction real easy if you're not watching the particular words that you're using. But anyhow, after the 8 hours of conversation between the two of us of texting, I talked him out of it. He went on back home to where he lived, which is like Florence, South Carolina, which is a good 100 miles away from here, and he's actually doing real good now. He's back into training in martial arts, of course, loves wrestling. He's actually getting into wrestling matches. He's very happy now that he had somebody that listened to him and helped him. And, of course, his mother, too, which she was very grateful and thanked me quite a bit that, you know, the way she put it was God had a reason for us two to meet, for us two to cross each other's path. And that was the purpose. Before he tried to commit suicide, I was introduced to him by my goddaughter, and, you know, God knew that he was headed in that direction eventually, and I was there to help.
Well, it's awesome to actually hear a success story. Have you, on the topic, have you ever lost anybody due to them taking their own life, or?
Not yet. Matter of fact, I'm counseling a young man now that was, unfortunately, another one of her boyfriends. But so far, he hadn't done anything. She must have a weird effect on guys.
Yeah, I know, right? I sent her to a relationship counselor.
Yep. But so far, I haven't. I would say, of course, that the first one, which was him, and of course, the very first one, which was me, myself, and I, when I was 18. If y'all are interested in hearing that,
but of course, that's what the show is all about.
Well. When I was 18, of course, I was very much in love with a girl. She actually lived across the highway from me, and I'd see her a lot, and, of course, went to school together. And after a little while, we actually went together for like 3 years, but about the third year, one of her old boyfriends moved into the neighborhood on my street. And I, at the time, was an extremely jealous person. I always was jealous at a young teenage or older teenage age and so forth. And he started talking to me, and I never knew that them two had ever gone together. So one night I went across the highway to her house, and he followed me. Evidently, he didn't have too many friends. He was the type of person that was sort of a know-it-all, good storyteller, I'll put it that way. And so he followed me, and then when he seen where I ended up, he walked on up, and of course, when she came out the door and seen him, they started talking, old times, this, that, and the other. And like I said, I was extremely a jealous rage. And also, I was in the learning how to put myself under self-hypnosis and so forth. And so we're all sitting there on the porch, and they're talking and making jokes, which some jokes you can take and some jokes you can't. And my temper is boiling higher and higher. So finally, I concentrated on a point across the street and put myself under self-hypnosis. And all that time when I did, I was contemplating doing myself in. Well, that particular night, I happened to have my 10-inch double-bladed dagger strapped to my leg. I carried it around a couple of times because of a couple of neighborhoods that are around that are pretty rough. So I had reached down with my hand, grabbed that dagger, and said the heck with it, and thrust it full force at my chest. When that dagger hit, it hit the cross I was wearing that night, dead center. It broke that cross in half. That cross literally saved my life. God had reached out with his hands and guided the tip of that dagger to that cross to keep the knife from penetrating my chest, where he had plans for me in the future, which I didn't fully realize yet, which I'd always wanted to be a minister since I was 15 years old. He literally said, "Nope, I've got plans for you. I'm not going to let you kill yourself." And when that cross did break, the thought going through my mind, the shame, the tears of wanting to end my life, it was horrific. I literally started crying. And, of course, forgetting the Lord, me wanting to do that. And it's, you know, now that I am a minister, reverend, it seems like a lot of the people that do come across my path have a bunch of mental problems. People I work with at work even have a few problems, and a couple of them have wanted to commit suicide, and I have, of course, talking to them, counseling privately, away from everybody else. And the only thing I can figure out at this point is that's why the Lord wanted me to be a reverend that I always wanted to be. He is actually sending me people across my path that are on that unfortunate journey, on their path.
And I think we've all had somebody in our life that, you know, you didn't understand at the moment why they were brought into your life. But
no, not later, whenever.
You know, later on it became apparent why.
Go ahead.
I think one of the greatest things that I wanted to make very well known on this show tonight, and the reason for this show, was simply the fact that there is help out there. Talk to your friends. Talk to a stranger. Shoot a message just at random to somebody on Facebook. You'd be amazed. Now, some people are just assholes at heart, but you never know.
You know, that is one thing when I created the event, and when I would post the all the info for the show, and it was amazing how many people, not amazing in a positive way, it was just amazing to me of how prevalent it is in all of our peers and all of our community of people I've never even spoken to were sending me messages about how suicide has affected their life in one way or another. How much that hits close to home, to where I've literally talked to over 100 people since Friday talking to me about their stories of how it directly affected their life, whether it was a friend or a family member, or it was, you know, they married somebody, a husband or wife, that their sibling or, you know, their best friend or something like that had committed suicide. Like, it's not as quiet as you think that it would be. I mean, it's not as in the background or few and far between as people would imagine or just put on their blinders and close it off to be. This is from like I said, this is over 100 people I've talked to about how it's affected their lives since Friday.
A lot of people.
Yeah, that's just since Friday.
Yeah, one thing that has become very well known about suicide, there is no specific category for it. It's all walks of life, rich, poor, good-looking, homely, skinny, fat, blonde, black-haired. There is no one category for it. It is fully encompassing of the human race.
You're absolutely and right.
It is the one thing that has absolutely no boundaries on where it reaches. And I think, I truly believe that, you know, it can be stopped or at least slowed way down by just reach out. You know, we see the extremely wealthy have done it, or what we believe are extremely wealthy. We've seen the indigent, poor, homeless do it. It's the one thing that has no boundaries.
So,
and
that's,
go ahead, Matt.
What was,
I mean, for what it is, hold on 1 second. Something just glitched on my phone and my screen went blank. So I got a text message and then it just went blank. So I'm trying to figure it out. But
nice. You got a great new tablet and your phone sucks.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I can't make phone calls from a tablet. That's the problem. But not sure if Gwen at Sunrise is going to be able to call in, as Dennis and I had spoke with before. But Dennis, here's something that I don't think that we've ever truly done. As far as my involvement in all of this, were there any questions that you had for me?
Can you, I guess one of the things that I want to know, are there signs to look for? I mean, I realize that you have a degree in abnormal psychology, which I think is ironic because I think you have abnormal psychology. but are there signs to watch for? I mean, everybody gets depressed. That kind of goes without saying.
Well, there are certain things. That's kind of a loaded question, because when you're trying to take a look at somebody to see if they have a tendency to lean towards self-harm, which there's people who are completely obvious, and then there's people who are just, that's their personal demeanor, and they actually love their life, they just don't like people. So that is a situational diagnosis. If you have somebody like, you know, a lot of people think, it's not so much prevalent now as it was back in like the mid to late 90s when like the whole goth movement came about where, oh, I think my kid's all messed up because he or she wears black all the time and it didn't matter, he or she, black lipstick, black nail polish, listens to Marilyn Manson. Parents would freak the hell out thinking that their child wants to either be homicidal or suicidal. And that wasn't the case. Suicide is actually more prevalent now than it was back in that time in the generation. As far as telltale signs, I mean, you can start out with the depressive end to where it's withdrawing from going out and doing things, withdrawing from family function, withdrawing from a relationship even, to where, and Bill kind of, it doesn't tie in directly, but it kind of ties in the same way. You get to a point to where in your own mental capacity, you're not happy in a relationship. So it's kind of like a you want your cake and eat it too, basically. Where you're not happy with the person, but it's not that you're not happy with the person, you're not happy with yourself. So you start to push them away. Then they develop the, well, apparently this person doesn't want me as much as they thought they did. But then you step back to be like, oh, that person doesn't want me. Then you feel alone. Then you start to feel just aggravated, depressed. I mean, if you start to get into chemical use, you start to get into, you know, alcoholism, shit like that. There's certain things that just, it depends on the tick of how that person deals with it. If you're talking to somebody who's just angry all the time, and it doesn't even have to be anything major, it's just constant anger. I mean, that's another sign of, you know, a possible emotional, just an emotional difference from where they were before. And I'm not saying that you got to contact the authorities and have them locked up, but just pay a little bit closer attention. The one thing that I did bring up as far as my friend Jennifer goes is postpartum depression. If you have somebody who has, it is way more common than what people think it is. Women who have children, that they, for a lot of people who don't know what postpartum depression is, it's a lot of crying. They may not tell you why they're crying, but one of the symptoms of postpartum depression is hating that child that's yours. It's, you seriously can't stand that child, and you don't know why. But it came from your body. It came from something you were trying for it, if you were trying for it. But you just cannot stand that child. So think about that. And Dennis, you being a father, and Bill the same, try and think about it. If you had something within you for 9 months, 8 to 10 months, let's call it that, that once it came out that you thought you were going to love and everything was going to be awesome, well, all the chemicals in your body change to where you hate that thing. You don't want anything to do with it. Of how much that, and Dennis, I know for a fact you, how much you love your kids. Imagine if you hated them.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine it. Just like I couldn't imagine what's going through the mind of somebody at the moment that decision was made.
Now, I mean, there's
not to say that, that's not to say that I haven't been to that point, not of hating the kids, but of making that decision. I have been to that point. And I'm not going to lie. I have been at the point where I have sat with my 40 under my chin and debated. And what always stopped me from doing it was knowing the pain that it would leave behind, and just having to grow up here and keep going on and battling what I'm dealing with and find someone to talk to get me through it. Uh, I just couldn't imagine, you know, and I know that postpartum depression is brought on by chemicals after childbirth and so forth, because the body just absolutely goes apeshit for a little while.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, Jacqueline in chat brought up some great points. I asked what some of the indicators were that we could look for. Withdrawal, giving away personal items, substance abuse, which many say substance abuse gives people the quote-unquote balls or the courage to go through with the actual act. You know, they're speculating now, and they're saying that Robin Williams was drinking the night that he did it. So there's really no defining answer to that question. You know, what do you look for? There's so many different things.
I've had friends
that have done this, and there were no outward signs whatsoever.
But and that's kind of what I was getting at is it's subjective and it's person to person because and you may not think it, but like your best friend, like Dennis, you and I, for example, I mean, that you're like a brother to me. You have been ever since basically the day I met you. You and I get along on so many levels, but we have such different personalities for a lot of things. So, I mean, you have to look at somebody for how well you know them and see what a difference in pattern is going to be, what a switch in emotion, what a switch in response, there's so many keys to look for, but it's individual to where there's, as an individual looking at that person, there really aren't a lot of keys. There may be somebody, and I know a few people that I counseled during and after school and stuff like that when I was doing, like, internship and, you know, getting more into working with counselors and psychiatrists and psychologists and all that. There were people that I know that hid their pain so well because they were used to it. They were used to hiding their pain so well to where you could be out with them the night before or the day before and you guys had an awesome day. But you had no idea that that person, the whole time that they were out there, manics and depressives are the best actors that you will ever see. I don't care. They will trump Brad Pitt and I don't care, Tom, whoever you think is an awesome actor, they will trump that. Because they will make you believe that everything is okay. And they will show no signs of it. And those are the ones that over time and over pattern, if they did end up switching to a different, you'll catch them in just a single nuance, in just something that they say, and they say it in a different way, or there's something that triggers just a lot of anger. That's where you can tell that there's a problem.
I'll be right back. I'm going to go screen one. Caller 3-1.
Hold on. That's what I'm messaging you right now.
Okay.
All right. Just read the message. But anyway.
Answered that.
Yep.
So
they got that for you.
We'll be right with you, Aaron. Thanks for calling, and we'll be right with you as soon as Matt finishes this train of thought.
But no, it's certain subtleties that it's very hard for just a general person, and especially when it comes to a loved one like a husband, wife, fiance, long-term boyfriend, long-term girlfriend, it gets to a point to where you just start to think, maybe he or she's in a mood. Maybe it's just something. But, yeah, Dennis, I think of anything that you've ever asked me over anything, that is the hardest question to answer.
Yeah, because there's really no correct answer.
If somebody were to call in right now,
variables to it.
If somebody were to call in right now and say, "Hey, I need help. Can you help me?" Within 5 minutes of a conversation, I can actually kind of discern what direction I need to go with it. But to ask as a generality, that's an impossible question to give a 100%, they decided that they're going to go out and do a whole bunch of coke, drink a whole bunch, and try and drive their car off a cliff. It's not that cut and dry.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. There is, you know, it's very difficult. It's very difficult to pin down exactly what to look for. But I got to say, Jacqueline in chat has a fantastic thing. Fantastic comment she just put in. It's almost impossible, I would say, for someone in the state of depression to ask for help. That's why she agrees with you, Matt, which, you know, at least somebody does. It's a personal thing. You have to make a person engage when they are acting different, and it's up to you to step in, become a nuisance, if you will, in their life to see what's bothering and get them to speak up.
I wouldn't go as far as nuisance. It's on the right path, but I wouldn't go as far as become a nuisance, because then they're going to withdraw from you. That's the problem. It's a very, very fine line of being intrusive to the point of having them open up to you, not you just badgering them, saying, "Well, what's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong?" Try that with your significant other and see how well that outcome turns out. And that's not on that emotional level of, "Hey, I think I'm not going to be alive tomorrow."
Yeah.
It's the right train of thought. It's just excessive as far as the answer. And that wasn't directed towards you. I swear that was just a generality to explain to people. Approach it not that, you know, headstrong. It's still got to be a little bit of a, we're going to walk a fine line with this, but just be a little aggressive about it.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a good way to do it. But, hey, Reverend Lodley, I want to thank you for calling in. I'm going to put you back on where you can listen to the show, and we're going to bring in our next caller, which is Aaron Hogan. We'll probably talk to you again soon, I'm sure, sir. Thank you again very much for calling in.
Thank you.
All right, let's go over and eventually. All right, well, I'm looking at the little thing just rolling.
No,
that makes me remember, think of that song. You see me roll and they hate them. And are you with us yet?
I thought I heard a laugh.
Every time I walk up,
I'm here.
Every time I see that damn little Windows thing just rolling around, and that song pops into my head. Like, oh, bitch, stop rolling and move on here. Welcome to the show, Aaron. Thanks for calling us here.
Hi.
So, Aaron, first off, I do have to say I need to congratulate you on everything that you've been doing. Holy crap, you have a lot of stuff going on.
I do. But if I don't have a lot of stuff going on, then, you know, that's when I get depressed.
Yeah. I did, you know what, I have to commend you also, well, two reasons. One, awesome review in the what was it, the iHorror, I can't remember the magazine, it was the top of my head, but the horror magazine that did the article on you. So, really, really cool. Congratulations
yeah,
on that.
Thank you.
Also, the other thing that I thought was absolutely amazing is what you decided to switch your profile picture to.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, it's not that hard to switch a profile picture. So it's
true.
It's a pretty simple gesture.
Yeah. So, you know what, I didn't get a chance to talk to you about it before. I saw Devaney put it out there on Twitter, and a bunch of people are sharing, a bunch of people are liking it. What is your tie and your support for all this? Was it something personal, or was it?
Yeah, it definitely, this is something that's really, really close to me, and it's something that, this is a cause that's really important to me. And, you know, going back to what you guys were just talking about, you know, I do want to say that, you know, trying to say how do you keep somebody from committing suicide? How do you know if that person's depressed in that way? You know, you have to remember that not everybody is the same. And so many people, including psychiatrists and psychologists and doctors, and all these people are trying to come up with, like, a list of surefire warning signs, and it just doesn't work that way. Every person is completely different from every other person, and so it's really hard, and I think what it comes down to me, is looking for that person's behavior. If you know that person and how they normally act, and they begin to act, in a way that is not normal for an extended period of time, then you know that maybe something's going on with them. But everybody reacts to everything differently. And so this whole idea of coming up with just a list of this is how people who are going to commit suicide acts is just it's a silly idea that I can't wrap my head around at all. But as far as helping people, you know, there's a guy, and I posted it on my page recently, and I'll probably post it on Twitter after this, but there's a guy I watched on YouTube. A friend of mine posted his video. It's called A Message to the Depressed, and his name is Sky Williams, and he did this great video. Just basically, he lost a friend to depression, and it's everything that he wished he would have said and done for that person. And as somebody who has been depressed before and as somebody who knows people who suffer from depression in the long term, so many of these things make so much sense. He's saying such simple things like, I know you don't want to go out, but I'm going to come over and bring you pizza. We're going to have pizza together. If you don't want to have pizza with me, I'll have pizza in the other room, and you can have pizza in this room. And, you know, you can practice your makeup on me. And, you know, just silly things. Like I know we don't want to go outside right now. It's, you know, you're not feeling right, and it's scary and loud outside. And, you know, so let's just do whatever you want that's going to make you feel better until you get through this. But I'm going to be here until that time comes. And when you're ready to leave this house, then I'm going to be there with you. And it's a really great message. It's a really great video that I'll post when I get done with this, and I'll tag you in it. But, you know, there is no telling somebody, you know, asking them what's wrong, what's your problem, what's the matter. That's not that big of a deal, because being, and I'm kind of rambling at this point, but there was another kid who gives great, a high school kid gives really great inspirational speeches, who suffers from depression, and his name skips my mind right now. But one of the things that he said about depression and suicide is that when something happens to you and you become extremely sad and you don't want to go anywhere for like a week, say somebody in your life dies, that is legitimate sadness that is caused by a situation. It's caused by something in your life, and that's something that people can understand. What depression that goes on for the long term that needs to be treated that people don't understand is, what that is being sad, not wanting to leave your house, not being able to get up, not being able to go do your everyday things, even though there's nothing wrong with your life. You and nobody around you can think of anything legitimate that's really wrong with your life, but all you can do is sit there and think about all these terrible things that probably aren't that big of a deal. But there's nothing legitimately wrong, and you still can't make yourself get up and do anything. And that's really what depression is, which is why just saying what's wrong, really doesn't help anybody.
Well, no, and that's what I was talking about, too, is when you start to get into that, you know, just berating people with, oh, what's wrong, they're actually going to withdraw from you. They're not going to open up. Because you become more of a nuisance and more of an issue in their life than actually being there for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, and what's wrong is so vague. You know, you drop your, I don't know, you drop a dollar somewhere and realize you're missing a dollar and somebody says, what's wrong? You know, that's an appropriate time to ask what's wrong. You know, you're laying around crying and you can't eat. You know, what's wrong doesn't really matter. You know, it's what can I do to help? Let me make you some food. I'm going to be here for you. And I'm not going to push you to talk to me, but if you want to talk to me, I'm here. That's, I think, what makes a difference to people who are really, really depressed and contemplating suicide. Somebody being there and not crying, knowing that that person cares enough to be there for them.
No, and I definitely completely agree. I don't know if you heard the beginning part of the show when I was talking about what had happened to me personally in this whole...
I think we discussed it a little, yeah.
Yeah, had a friend that I created the event for the show on Friday, invited her to the event, and she decided to take her own life on Saturday. So it was a girl that I've known since I was probably about 12 years old. I'm 33 now. She, it's still, you know, on Facebook, you create an event and you invite people and it's, you know, people just don't pay attention or don't see it or whatever. Created the event on Friday. She was the fourth person that I invited. And on Saturday, she took her own life. She has a fiance, or had a fiance, a two-month-old, and decided to not go on with her life anymore.
Yeah, and you know, it's really sad, and it's really difficult for everybody involved. It's really difficult for her family. It's really difficult for her friends, for you. And I know what a lot of people are thinking when you say that is, well, how selfish and cowardly is she? And that is such a closed-minded thing to think. And it really, really bothers me when people call suicide selfish and cowardly. Because it sounds like she had so much going on in her life. She had so much going for her. She had a fiance. She was going to get married. She had a child. And there was something happening that just couldn't be explained that made her feel so sad. But if you look at her life, it looks like, well, I can't imagine what's possibly wrong. Why would you leave those people behind? That's selfish. That's how it looks. But in her head, that's not how she feels. And it's so sad to know that for some reason she didn't feel like she could talk to somebody. And that's not necessarily for lack of trying, but, you know, that's what we're discussing, is maybe whoever she had to talk to didn't know what to do. You know, but it can be really difficult.
Yeah. So, and that's, you know, you have to look at somebody who's kind of on that fence. I mean, you can't look at them as fragile. You can't look at them as, oh, you know what, they're broken inside, blah, blah, this, that, and the other thing. You have to look at them as, how can you compliment them for their strong attributes of everything that they have going for them?
Yes.
And compliment that in not a direct way to make them feel like they're crazy. It's just, you know, even something as simple as like, oh, yeah, I went to the mall, I did this, this, that, and the other thing. Oh, look at what I bought. You know, something, oh, that's awesome. Just something along those lines that's just uplifting, not what's wrong with you? Why aren't you doing this anymore? Why aren't you doing that anymore?
I think people are very, very quick to, not everybody. I don't mean to generalize people who aren't depressed either. That's not what I'm trying to do. But I think that people who don't suffer from depression, people who don't have suicidal thoughts, people who don't have some kind of diagnosed mental disorder, they can't possibly understand what it's like inside the head of somebody who does. And it's, you know, just the smallest things. You know, if you think about it, the smallest things can make or break your day. Just anybody. You know, if you're just having a bad day and all these little things are going wrong and then you lose something that was pretty important to you, but it could easily be replaced, the rest of your day was so bad that you're so upset. You know, and the same thing goes for good days. You know, everything's going great. Everything, you know, you're having fun, you're hanging out with friends, you're going out to dinner, and that was just a really great day. So it's not necessarily, you know, to try and simplify it a little bit, it's not necessarily this one thing happened and made me sad and this one thing happened that made me happy. It's a whole bunch of things combined. So 10 million things could have gone wrong over a long course of time that for some reason someone who might commit suicide just can't get those things out of their head. Everything seems negative. Whereas somebody who might not suffer from depression or be at risk for suicide sees all the positive things. And so sometimes the positive things have to be pointed out to people with depression. And something as simple as, I bought a new shirt. Or like you said, you know, oh, that's a really nice shirt. That looks really great on you. That's so cool. We should go shopping together. It's just something so silly that can just make your day slightly happier. And you know, people really miss things, just little details like that. Just small gestures that make other people happy are the kinds of things that could possibly stop that person from killing themselves that day.
Yeah. Well, and there's a lot of other things to blame, too, as far as, like, and actual statistic-wise, 82.4% of clinical depressives are women. And a lot of the reason behind that is societal comparisons. So, you see all these all these commercials for hair dyes and makeup and, you know, just all these things to be compared to XYZ person that looks perfect on TV.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes down to it, the truth of the matter is happiness is internal. You have to find something that makes you happy. And also that as far as that percentage goes, it's between the ages of 14 and 28. So in that time, there's so much impression. There's so much involved in that, and it doesn't help when you go to school with, like for high school kids and stuff like that. It doesn't help when you go to school with kids that their parents are more well off than you are.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't get all that. The math behind these studies is actually staggering. But that's also the person who's not going to open up and talk to somebody about anything because they don't want to seem like they're weird or, you know, that they have a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do think that it's really, it can be really difficult to feel like you're burdening somebody with your problem. That's why I feel like it's so important for people, if you know how your close friend acts and now they're starting to act differently and it's been going on for a little while, just to show that person that you're there and not pester them and say, why aren't you doing this? What's wrong? To show that person that you're there and that they are not a burden if they want to talk to you is so important in preventing suicide. Because so many people who are depressed feel like they're burdening their friends and family by talking about their problems.
Yeah, and, you know, and even between you and I, there's, like, and you know this, you're a very outspoken person, and I absolutely love that about you. There's been times that you posted something on Facebook or Twitter or something, and I'll send you a message and be like, hey, you okay? You're like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm like, all right, just checking in. So,
yeah, and it's really nice to know that, it's always nice to know that there's just somebody there who is not going to be bothered. You know, if you say, I can't take this anymore, and, you know, just somebody answer me, to know that somebody's going to be there and, you know, come over and bring you some In-N-Out burger and you're just going to watch a movie and cry, and that's fine with them. You know, those are the kind of people that you need in your life. Those are the kind of things that you need to do for your friends that are depressed.
Yeah.
Stop bragging about In-N-Out Burger.
Yeah, I know. I was just going to say that. I'm going to virtually slap you for In-N-Out Burger. I'm supposed to be going to L.A. Probably early October. I'm hoping. And that's the first. Every time I go to L.A., it's the first thing I do is I get off the plane and I go to In-N-Out Burger.
Well, as soon as I get to St. Louis, I'm grabbing some White Castle and some Steak and Shake.
Yes.
Okay, that's two. So, Matt, when you virtually slap her for the In-N-Out Burger comment, give her one for the White Castle for me, because I miss those days. Now, I do have a Steak and Shake here, and I've got to say, I'm not a fan. It may have just been that one, but... funny story about that one. We had a group come down from New York to go to St. Alban's Asylum. And keep in mind, these are New York boys. The barbecue that he bought at Steak and Shake, he took one bite of it spit it back into the plate and ask, what the hell are they trying to do, poison me? Who puts vinegar on barbecue? And I nearly peed myself.
You know, it's I could sit and eat Steak and Shake. I could sit and eat their fries with just as much cheese as possible forever.
Oh yeah,
just forever, and that would make me happy.
You know, and it's kind of weird that I'm going to bring this into it, but I have always thought that as far as emotion and food are so tied together.
Yeah.
Like, food makes people happy. That's why there's so many fat Americans. But, no, just in general, like, I mean, there's so much emotion that's tied up in food, and it has to do with all right, I'm going to get a little scientific. It has to do with releases of dopamine. Also, your body naturally produces tryptophan, which makes you, which we find in turkey. That's why we're all tired around Thanksgiving. But after you eat a big meal, you just want to lay down and go to sleep, even if you don't have any tryptophan in the food, because it's a stimulant. That's why, like, my number one passion as far as, like, hobby goes is cooking. I love cooking. And I love cooking for other people. Half the time when I cook, and I'm not talking mac and cheese and, you know, the ramen noodles.
I love mac and cheese. Mac and cheese
I do
is
too.
That's like my comfort food. I could eat several boxes of macaroni and cheese.
So,
I mean, I'd probably be sick, but.
I'm still working on November, and you know what, or you and Dennis know what I'm talking about. Ghost Conference and the Film Festival here. I'm still working on that with your manager and everything. If in fact that we work it out to where you guys can come up here, I'm taking the Cubas. Cubas has, I think, 6 or 7 different types of mac and cheese where it comes on a platter.
What?
And it is the most amazing mac and cheese ever.
That sounds like a place. That just sounds like I just need to go there right now. Like, I can't wait until November. I just have to go now.
Well, you're out in California now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be a 3.5-hour flight if you caught one in LAX right now.
I don't know. I feel like it's worth it. It's a platter of macaroni and cheese. I mean, I feel like I can dip into my savings for macaroni and cheese. Come on.
And all of their burgers, which are phenomenal too, are named after like heavy metal bands. So you have like the Megadeth, the Anthrax, the like, yeah. Their food's awesome. But anyway, no,
we're gonna have to do that.
Yes, for sure. But no, that has been one thing that I've. And it sounds very, very strange. If anybody that I've talked to who has a clinical depression or higher, as far as their rating goes from previous therapists and all that, I will always ask them what their favorite food is and start talking about that. And you see a change in their demeanor. You see a change in their personality.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love XYZ. I used to go there as a kid, and it's been the same. We do it for birthdays or whatever. Like, you see that brightness come out of that person.
Yeah, you know, it's really funny how closely food and emotions and memories are connected.
Oh yeah.
Part of that also is scent. You know, which is why, you know, I mean, with all the scented candles and everything, like, I don't know what my deal is. Maybe it's that I either really liked Thanksgiving or Christmas at my grandma's house when I was a kid, but rarely like any scented candles that are not Christmas themed. It's
so like
pine or
pumpkin pie or
not so much pine, but yeah, it's gotta be pumpkin pie, apple spice, cinnamon something. I don't know why that is. It could be like a chocolate peppermint. I had a chocolate peppermint one once. That was good. And that's all I really care to have around my house. And everybody I know hates it. They're like, it's the middle of summer. It smells like cinnamon. And I'm like, well, it's happy. I like cinnamon. Cinnamon,
it smells like happy.
Cinnamon in the summer.
No, and actually, like, physically what goes on in your brain is scent is above everything the number one memory sparker.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why for most people, when you smell something, it reminds you of something. If you smell something, you're going to remember the smell more than anything, whether you see it, touch it, taste it, hear it. Scent is the number one of the senses that triggers memory.
Yeah.
And you mentioning food, air fresheners, and pine reminds me of a joke when I was a kid.
Uh-oh.
A woman stepped into the elevator. She is a salesperson for, like, scents and candles and air fresheners and things like that. Had, like, barbecue or something for lunch. She makes it to, like, the third floor. She's in the elevator alone, rips a hot one. Stinks up the whole elevator. Grabbed a can of pine air freshener and just saturated the elevator. Fifth floor, some poor drunk dude got on it and nearly passed out and says, oh, my God, it smells like someone shit a Christmas tree. I don't know why that joke just popped to mind. Thanks. Now I either want to eat or... yeah, start decorating my house for Christmas. Way to screw me up tonight, guys.
I know, we still have two holidays before Christmas, too. So
I know, right?
Christmas stuff is going to be coming up, like, next week in the stores. It'll be out soon.
Don't tell me that.
Sam's Club last night, and they already have all their Christmas crap out.
Oh, gosh.
I haven't been to Walmart, but I'm sure they've already got stuff out for, you know, New Year's and probably have a display set up for Valentine's Day already.
Yeah, Valentine's Day and Christmas and Easter. They kind of like to skip over everything else. And suddenly everything's just filled with candy.
Erin, you're a Midwest girl. I know that you're not looking forward to winter either.
Nope.
Yeah, let's. Yeah, Dennis, no more talk about Christmas. But here, all right, here for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the high's in the 60s. No, I'm not okay with that. Oh wait, and in another show, because it ends up happening at every show. That is your weekly Chicago weather report.
Let's see, I don't even have to look up the California weather report. I can tell you that inside of my car for the next year, it will be 99 degrees, and that's just not going to change. But outside, it'll be about 75 to 80.
Are you out by Devaney? Or are you actually in L.A.?
I'm actually in L.A.
Okay.
So, yeah. So I don't really have the drastic weather changes that they do at the beach and at the desert. It's a little more stable where I am.
Well, no, the reason I was asking is if you're in L.A. area, I'll make some phone calls. That'll be really, really fun for you if you have any free time. If you don't, then next time you're out there, But my family worked for the Tonight Show for years, so
oh,
I can
nice.
Yeah. Have some decent contacts out there.
Yeah. I was gonna say free time, what's that? But now I'll pretend that I have free time.
Oh, really?
This free time. Whatever this free time you think of is, I will find some.
All right. The only thing that I want in return is I don't care if it tastes so, or if you put it in your freezer when you get home, just bring me an In-N-Out burger so I can actually look at it. I won't eat it. I mean, that'd be gross, but
I'm going to find a way to bring In-N-Out burger with me in November.
My brother, when he was out there last time, he ended up taking In-N-Out burgers, going to Baskin Robbins, getting dry ice, and FedEx me In-N-Out burger. Like overnight air.
Did you do that?
Yeah.
I didn't know you could FedEx dry ice. I mean, I don't.
What? Oh, yeah.
That's so much easier than what I've been doing with my St. Louis style pizza. I've been breaking it up and, like, sealing it. Every time I go to St. Louis, I get pizzas, and I break them up into the slices, and I seal every slice, and then I put them in bags, and I pack them in ice, and then I take them on the plane.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's an easier way to do it. Most places will ship you one.
Well, but the thing is, you can have St. Louis style pizza ingredients shipped to you, but then you kind of have to make it, and it's not really the same thing. I remember making it in St. Louis once, and it's just not the same, because I, with a good conscience, cannot burn a pizza crust. And that's really how you have to eat St. Louis-style pizza, is burned. So.
They have to burn it for you. You can't burn it yourself.
I can't. I look at something where all the cheese is melted and it's beginning to be golden brown, and I say, oh, that's done, and I take it out. Whereas, you know, Emos, they look at it and they say, oh, parts of that are starting to get black. We'll take it out soon. And that's kind of normal, I think, for St. Louis-style pizza. And I love it. I've met 99 million people not from St. Louis who cannot stand St. Louis-style pizza. They hate it. Like, I think I've only met one person who actually liked it who's not from St. Louis. Everybody hates it, except for us. Everybody in St. Louis. We leave St. Louis, and then we're like, wait, the rest of the country doesn't have Provol cheese?
That's actually, that's my friend Jody Parks. That's her favorite pizza place, is Emo's.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's definitely, you know, better, but, you know, going about trying to find a place, Emo's is kind of the chain. You're driving by, you want St. Louis-style pizza, and you're going through. There's probably one off the highway. Just stop there. And then you'll probably hate it. But we like it, so we don't care if you hate it.
But, all right, Aaron, we have about 10 minutes left in actual showtime. Anything that you want to promote that you have coming up, or just anything at all, feel free to throw it out.
Yes. Actually, I have a film that's going to be released by Lionsgate on October 14th. It's called Throwdown. It stars myself and another, I wouldn't call him an up-and-coming because he produced the film as well, but another actor named Timothy Woodward Jr. But we've also got, not to put us first, Misha Barton, Vinnie Jones, Luke Goss, and Danny Trejo are all in this movie. It's coming out October 14th. It's called Throwdown, and it'll be released by Lionsgate.
Nice.
Yeah, it should be good. So I'm kind of excited about it. The Japanese version, which is called Red Revenge, is already out. That came out a couple months ago in Japan. But, you know, unless you have a fancy DVD player, it'd be kind of hard to watch that version here. So I would, and you can already pre-order it. So if you go to Amazon and you put in Throwdown under DVDs and movies, it will come up. It's already, you're already able to pre-order it.
All right. Oh, I don't think that I can say anything about it, but you have another film that's going to be coming out soon, which I believe is spring, summer, or fall of next year. You know the one I'm talking about that was shot in New York?
Yeah, Dwelling.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we can talk about it.
We can. You know, to an extent. We just finished shooting it. I got home a month ago from shooting it. So everybody who's asking me where and when can I see Dwelling, you're not going to see it for a really long time because that's how movies are made. And I wish I could speed it out, not for everybody else, but for myself because I want to see it. But it'll be quite a while. But for anybody who is at Scarecon up near Buffalo, near Syracuse, New York, around that area right now, I think it's this weekend. They're going to be previewing a scene from Dwelling, and Devaney will be there promoting it and signing autographs and selling merch as well. So Devaney Pin will be up there promoting Dwelling, and meanwhile, I will be promoting Throwdown, as well as the new trailer for House of Manson in Ventura, California this weekend at the C4 Central Coast Comic-Con. So we'll be in two different places. We're splitting up. That's not normal for us recently, but...
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, we've kind of been joined at the hip lately, but we're splitting up this weekend. So Devaney will be up in New York with Scarecon doing House of Manson and Dwelling, and I will be down over here in California on the other end of the country this weekend doing House of Manson and Throwdown.
Yes. The House of Manson trailer is awesome. A totally different dynamic of what the other Manson stuff has been about in the past.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and you know, I'm really excited about it. I think people are really, really liking it, and I'm really excited because most of the stories, obviously what intrigues people the most and always has is how, you know, evil Charles Manson must be to get these nice suburban kids to go kill people, and they want to focus on the murders, which is cool, and Helter Skelter was great, and you know, murdering people isn't cool, but, you know, it's a great story. You know, Helter Skelter was great. Like, I've watched, in my research, I've watched probably everything that there was available anywhere about Charles Manson, the Manson family, anybody who was involved with them whatsoever. And but the difference with House of Manson is that we're going to follow Charlie up to the trial, as opposed to kind of going through, Charlie's a little crazy and we all live, you know, on this ranch, and now we're going to murder people, and then here's a trial, and those are the three acts. Our movie is more focused around, you know, the murders are there, but it's not a blood and gore, let's kill everybody. That's not really what it's about. What it's really about is, I think, Charles Manson and these kids' journeys from childhood to that night and what happened and why. So the one negative comment that I saw, and maybe it's not even negative, the only thing that I saw was somebody saying that our Manson lacked a creep factor. But I don't think that people realize how incredibly charming Charles Manson must have been in order to get these people to do these things. And it was only after he became the center of attention because of these trials, and then his parole hearings started happening, and he needed to continue to be the center of attention, that he continued to get weirder and weirder and weirder. And that just draws focus. You know what I mean? So I would argue that that Charles Manson was probably quite charming and became significantly creepier as time went on and as he got more paranoid. If some creepy guy just randomly came up to me and asked me to live on his, blind friend's ranch, I definitely would not take him up on that offer. So he must have seemed like a pretty okay guy.
Well, and he had really, really good drugs.
I think that had a lot to do with it. They had many, many good drugs. But the general consensus, I think overall, from the family was that everything kind of started out with just peace, love, drugs, and, everything was communal. And, what happened to, and our film kind of goes through it, what happened, with Charlie and his state of mind earlier in his life as things progress, as he begins to get more paranoid. That's when some people, like my character, I played Linda Kasabian, who was a real person. She's still living today. And she was not convicted for the murders, actually. But she, she started saying, what am I involved with? What am I doing? This guy's, it was like this. It was happy. And now this guy's really paranoid. And I don't think I want to be part of this now. And, she left the ranch and got her child after it was raided. So not everybody completely followed him 100% into the paranoia, but many people did, and many people still do.
Yeah, like was to be his soon-to-be wife. But we got 90 seconds left in actual real time. The British woman just informed me of that. So I do want to thank Reverend Bill, Aaron, dear, I do want to thank you. If anybody does need, this is something that is serious, and I'm sure Dennis and I are going to have a show about it again coming up, I'd say probably in the next couple months, just to keep it in the focus. Otherwise, you can find us at CPRMet, CPRMet and CPR Dennis. Also, find us on Facebook and Twitter at CPR, Struggling Paranormal Researchers. The .com is in the works. I've been working on that. Also, if you do need, you can feel free, and I'm going to throw this out there for everybody live, feel free to contact me if you are having any issues at 331-251-4621. That is my personal cell phone. Honestly, call me anytime. And other than that, everybody, you have a good night. I thank you for joining us. I hope we can possibly help somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. And really quick, just to throw that out there, if anybody needs help and Just really quickly, 24/7, if you can't get a hold of anybody, the National Suicide Prevention Hotline number is 1-800-273-TALK. So it's 1-800-273-8255. So please, please, please call it.
Awesome.
All right, we are now in the archive, as usually happens, and I'm not surprised it happened on this show.
No, it never surprised me. We can have the most boring topic, and we still end up in archive. Which, as far as I know, Matt, from what I have looked at, we hold the record still for longest show, period.
Yeah.
We carried over 2.5 hours in archive one time. So, you know, for an hour and a half, So we had a 3.5 hour long show. But
yeah,
that's just the way we roll.
Just what we do.
I still don't know anybody who's trumped that.
It would be difficult to trump that. I feel like if we talked about, you know, nail files, maybe we could go even longer.
All right, so next week on Full Spectrum Radio, we're gonna be talking with Erin Marie Hogan about nail files.
Yeah, you know, why not? Everybody can call in with their opinion of, you know, what do they file their nails with? Do they have one in their purse? Do guys file their nails? I only say
yes,
this because right now I'm sitting here holding a Christmas-themed nail file that is falling apart. So I'd kind of like to know who uses these. What do you think of these? They're not very well made.
My issue with the little paper ones.
Yeah.
My issue with those, they're foam. My nails are extremely strong, so I have to push kind of hard. And it always ends up cutting through the damn paper. So I cheated and I bought one of the metal ones. And apparently I have either high iron, high calcium. I do drink a lot of milk. But even that one, it's not as coarse as it used to be. And how the hell are you supposed to use the middle of the file? The only thing I can use on it's the edge.
Have you tried the glass one?
Why are you gonna bring race into this?
They're pretty intense.
No, I haven't. But I did find out something that can shorten my nails in a heartbeat. I did this the other day too, Matt, and I didn't tell you. I drove a splinter under my fingernail, and as I grabbed the diagonal wire cutters, I clipped everything getting that thing out. That hurt like a son of a bitch. But no, I tried the black ones. What are they like? Black oxide, something like that.
Huh. I don't know. I don't know all these fancy terms, but.
Erin, as you can see, we can do a show about anything.
Yeah. But you're going to continue about nail files without me, because I'm going to go to the gym, because not going to the gym makes me depressed. So I like to make sure that I do that every day.
Well, all right. You know, the one thing that we didn't touch on, and there's still people that get to listen, I'm not going to keep you from going to the gym and making you happy. Is there anything that you do due to the subject or topic, promotion-wise, or, like, is there a foundation you promote, or is there anybody that you work with?
There will be soon. I will be, I'm in talks right now with somebody, a specific foundation, about working with them on charity, and we're working on an article, things like that. So that'll be announced soon. But I actually am connecting with somebody right now. There's also, I will be out of town But for anybody in the Los Angeles area, there's something called Out of the Darkness, which is an extremely long walk. I forget how long it is, but it's an extremely long walk overnight. And it's going to be this October over the weekend, if anybody wants to do that. And I also strongly support to write Love on Her Arms as well. But I'm working on connecting with another specific charity. I don't have any official connections with either of those things. They're just two things that I support. But I am working on actually doing some events, doing some charity, doing some auctions, and releasing some articles with another foundation, and that'll be announced pretty soon.
Good. Well, if anything pops up, you need anything at all, just tag me in it. I will promote the hell out of it for you because it's an amazing thing that you're doing. So definitely appreciate it. Any love that I can give back, I promise you I will, to the best of my ability.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and if everybody was speaking of which, if everyone was just a little bit nicer to everybody else, you know, the world would be a better place.
Yeah.
We can all help each other somehow.
As much as global unity seems like an awesome thing, we all know that it's not possible, but at the same time, if we can help one person and keep them here, that's a damn good start.
Yeah, I'm a strong believer, you know, like I was saying earlier, that just, you know, one kind gesture for somebody, something as simple as helping them up if they've tripped and fallen, or, you know, something as simple as picking up a $20 bill and being like, hey, you dropped this, and not just pocketing it, you know, that could make their day. That could make them just think, what a nice person. Nice people really do exist.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that Jacqueline brought up in chat that really hit home with me, she made mention of today's TV. TV shows have changed so dramatically in the last couple of decades.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't show, and I'll kind of give away my age a little bit on this one. Think back to simply watching the Andy Griffith Show. They sat down and had dinner as a family each night. You know, things like that, there was so much more closeness. But you know, they don't even show things like that on TV anymore.
Yeah, that's something I hadn't really thought about, but it's very true. And even when you think about the subject matter, you know, things, you know, bad things happened or somebody did something not so great, and then, you know, it was explained to them why it wasn't so great, and then they fixed it. And that was kind of how television was formulated a while back. And now it's kind of moved into, you know, there's still some of that if you're watching, like, teen dramas and things like that. They're still hitting some pretty hard issues, and sometimes they'll smack you over the head at the end with, you know, what they believe is the right thing to do. But most of the really big shows now don't focus too much on, you know, the closeness with family or with your best friend. They're more focused around either fantasy or, you know, things that aren't quite so positive, people who don't, you know, people not having the closeness of a family. And I don't know if television is a reflection of our culture now, or if our culture is a reflection of our television. I'm not really sure. But that's a good point, that the formula for a successful television show has definitely changed.
Oh, most definitely. Well, I mean, try to find anything similar to The Cosby Show. You know, it was good, wholesome family values. You know, it was about the closeness that family should be. It was about the morals and values that you should instill in your children. And mm-hmm. we just don't see anything like that anymore.
Yeah, you really don't. Even in a lot of children's shows, you don't.
And it's a really good point that you just made as to whether TV is changing our society, or society has changed TV. Well,
yes, it's interesting to think about.
You look at the masses and their ratings for like bullshit like Jersey Shore and, you know, just absolute crap. And not to, I'm not saying anything bad about the people who are on those shows, but like seriously.
Yeah, but the show is not about being a family. The show is about a bunch of kids being away from their families, going out and partying and doing ridiculous things, and their relationships with each other. But it doesn't really have that much to do with, you know, even as being a, quote, reality show, there's not that sense of closeness. Really even moral very, very often, because it's a bunch of kids going out partying. That's the premise of the show. You know,
and
so it's not at all the same thing.
Do you remember the start of where that all came from? Was the first season of Real World?
Yeah, when they put them all in that apartment. They didn't even have a house. They just had, like, a loft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was here's some assholes we're going to put in one area, and we're going to watch them fight.
Yeah, and you know, it's an interesting social experiment. And I like The Real World for many seasons, but now it's become 50% of television, you know. I was just watching last night because I can't help it. Like, here I am being brainless, and last night I'm watching part 3 of the reunion for the Bad Girls Club season 12. What the hell am I watching? Let's just take the 7 most unstable women we can possibly find and put them in a house, and we're going to record them and let the whole world watch them just beat each other up. And I was sitting there, they brought in a life coach this season, which they haven't done since season 1. You can tell I've been watching this show forever. And you know, it, for some people it seemed to be helpful, but for the most part these girls just didn't seem to care. They you know, didn't really take advantage of this free celebrity life coach that was there for them. Some people did and some people didn't. So I'm just sitting there watching this reunion, and they're still punching each other. They're not even living together anymore. They've been apart, and they're still punching each other. And I'm just thinking, what happened to, you know, talking about things that bothered us, or, you know, just not hanging out with that person because you dislike the way they act? I'm just trying to figure out what happened. Along the way, somewhere between The Cosby Show and The Bad Girls Club season 12, something went wrong.
Yeah, producers that have no soul. That's what went wrong.
And you know, it's funny because the first for a few seasons, producers used to just jump in right away. They wouldn't let them fight. And if you hit somebody or threw something at somebody or shoved somebody, you went home. That was not okay. And now
it's loaded.
Yeah, now people have like a 90-second time frame before anybody jumps in. So, I mean, these girls are just, you know, just pummeling each other for, you know, a minute to 90 seconds before anybody bothers to try and stop them because people want to watch them fight on TV. And, you know, so even within the same show, it went from, we're going to put these angry girls in a house and watch them yell at each other, but when they see themselves on TV, maybe they'll change. It went from that being the premise to, you know, let's just watch them kill each other.
You know, and I actually made a joke one time, and people, I posted it online, and people actually sat and thought about it for a second, and they're like, I think that you're right. I think that the producers of these shows used to be professional hockey coaches or hockey refs when hockey was on a hiatus, that there wasn't enough fighting on TV. So like, all right, well, let's put these conceited girls in a house together and see what the hell happens. Oh, no. Fight. All right, we're going to let you go for a little bit. Little bit. All right, that's enough.
Yeah, it seems like as the seasons have progressed, you're just allowed. Now I've seen a couple people punch people on the show, and then the producers kind of decide that, oh, well, the other person was the aggressor, and we're not going to send this person home. And you know that they're not sending them home because the person who threw the punch is better entertainment than the person who caught the punch. You know, and so you're sitting there like, where are your morals? You know, I thought there were rules to this, that, you know, these girls are supposed to see themselves on TV and think, oh God, do I act like that? But you're just letting them punch each other and not, you know, enforcing the rules whatsoever. They have no reason not to fight each other. It used to be you get kicked out of this super nice house that you're living in, and things aren't paid for anymore. And now it's, you might or might not get kicked out. We'll talk about it after the fact. So
yeah, nobody
gets... Even in the same show, the morals, they've completely changed.
Oh, yeah. Because the ratings have changed. That's the key. You have the ratings, might as well keep it. Let them beat the crap out of each other. More people are going to watch if they do.
At this point, they know what they're getting into. You know, I feel bad for whatever season it was where it became okay to punch people on the show and live in fear. I feel bad for the people on that season. I don't know when that happened. But, you know, it used to be just a lot of yelling and screaming and hilarious anger issues that you're just thinking, wow, that person's angry. And now it's just fighting. Kind of sad. But somehow I'm still watching it. So...
All right, so this is where my age is going to show, and yours, I don't know how well vested you were in the real world kind of thing. The last episode, or last season that I watched of Real World was the one with Puck.
Okay, yeah.
That was like season 2.
Yeah. Yeah, that was early.
What are they in, like season 34 now?
I don't know. They've been doing the real world, road rules, Survivor, Redemption, couples I don't know what they're doing. At this point, these people that were on The Real World, you know, way, way, way back when, are still on The Real World just playing games against each other, hoping at some point to win. And I'm kind of like, let's just move on. Let's accept that this is over and do something else with our lives. But I watched Puck on the show. Let's see, I watched up through, Ruthie. Let's see, she was, because Ruthie was on there, she was, like, the first day she got alcohol poisoning. And so you do watch these people go through some, there was one girl, I forget her name, but she was a Mormon. And because she was on the show living with guys, her college that was a very strict Mormon college was going to kick her out. And, you know, so you do watch on these things some, or you used to at least. You used to watch some really interesting things transpire just about people and their relationships and, you know, putting, they would always put people that are very different from each other in this house to see how they interact. And I'm not even sure that's the goal anymore. I think at this point the producers are just picking people that they know want to fight everyone and anyone and just throwing them together. But it used to be a fun mix of people. And I think that was what was so cool about it in the beginning.
Well, and that's the reason that when I talk about The Real World that I always bring up which was 1994, God, I'm old.
Yeah.
That was 1994.
Don't bite me.
That cast. Yeah, Dennis, I know. You've actually been dead for about 4 years. We just haven't told you yet.
just wait for better EVPs.
So, but no, 1994, and there was one person that I was extremely impressed by on that show was Pedro.
I was just gonna bring up Pedro. I was.
Pedro in the early 1990s, homosexuality and somebody with AIDS was not that well accepted.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, not at all. I mean AIDS was still such, and I mean it's scary now, let's not downplay it, but it was so terrifying then because, you know, in the 80s, you know, that 1994, we're still talking about being fairly close to the initial outbreak where AIDS and HIV became an epidemic and started hitting people that were not homosexual and were not having those relations because people started getting it through blood transfusions, and suddenly it wasn't just a gay problem, it was an everybody problem. And so a lot of people were really terrified and didn't know what to think. So for him to be on television, first of all, to be openly gay on television, and to be not only openly gay, but a Cuban American, so not even a white male, and also to talk about the fact that he has AIDS was just an insanely impressive, informative thing. Like people get to know somebody like that. They feel like they know that person and there's some level of understanding. And it was kind of revolutionary.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Can you imagine if anything like Archie Bunker, All in the Family, were put on the air today?
That would not go over well.
No, I can see... You know, I can see riots in the streets over something like that today. And that gives a, that in itself will give a stark contrast to how quick everything changed from, now, TV in the 60s and 70s. I don't recall much of the verbiage that was used, but I don't think you would have heard, you know, even the, what's considered a politically correct term of homosexual. I don't think you would have even heard that on that time period.
No, absolutely not.
Because it wasn't spoken of.
No.
It was, you know.
Well, I mean, even farther back, people didn't even talk about women being pregnant on television. If they did, they would say, I think I Love Lucy was one of the first, they were the first to have, I believe they were the first to have Lucy and Desi in beds that were not separated. They were also the first to say on television that a woman was expecting. And she also did the whole show and did that whole show while she was pregnant, which was unheard of. People did not do that, and they didn't address that issue, and it's not even a taboo issue. It's just, you just didn't do it.
Well, now it's not a taboo issue. But then again...
No, it's definitely
then,
not. We've got teen moms everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah,
and when I say teen moms everywhere, I mean teen mom, the TV show, not...
The show, right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, back then, they wouldn't have even dared say, you know, half of the words that you hear on regular evening TV now.
Oh, no.
It was unfathomable to say bitch, and now you hear it on half the shows.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I think I would venture to say that TV, you know, we were talking earlier, has TV changed culture or has culture changed TV? I think I would have to venture to say that TV has changed culture. I would stand on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Because the more liberal TV got with comments and the more TV tried to progress towards what was considered that line that you just don't cross. I think culture started to take a dive also.
Yeah.
Well, put it this way. I just happened to glance up at my TV, which is on and on mute, and it was a commercial for CougarLife.com. Really?
You're watching, like TV or something.
No, well, you know what? I will tell you what it is in a second. I have on, actually, Discovery Science Channel.
Oh, good Lord. That makes it even worse.
I
know.
I feel like something, you know, legitimate should be on any channel that says Discovery or Science.
Yeah.
That kind of was a letdown just then.
I know, right?
Yep. And now, don't take this wrong, anybody. I'm not opposed to interracial relationships or homosexuality, or I have a simple philosophy. If you're an asshole, you're an asshole. If you're a good person, you're a good person. I don't pick on any groups whatsoever. But if you watch TV lately, let's go back to just the last 5 years. Look at the percentage of shows that started showing interracial relationships and homosexuality. And look how so many programs all of a sudden started focusing on those, and they made them mainstream. Even though as a society, we were already accepting it more and more and more, look how much TV has started putting it out there.
Mm-hmm. And what makes me, on that note, what makes me a little, I'm not sure what the word for it is, but maybe concerned. I don't really know. I guess I'm not really that concerned. But something along those lines, I'll, you know, is that a lot of, and this happens to many minorities on television shows, a lot of gay characters on television shows become caricatures and have kind of, in a way, taken being a real gay man or lesbian woman or bisexual with feelings for another person and changed it into being this fabulous caricature that everybody can laugh at and have their jokes with.
Yeah. They're over the top with every portrayal.
Yeah. Yeah, and I have seen many that are not. I remember, this will show my age, Dawson's Creek, when they had, I don't remember his name, but Kerr Smith was on Dawson's Creek, and he played a gay football player, and he was just normal guy, you know,
yeah,
but that's not really the focus now. Now the focus is more on the sitcom caricature.
Make them flamboyant in that role.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the character from Dawson's Creek, he was, you know, he acted as manly as the rest of the football players did. He just happened to be gay. They didn't make him a flamer, so to speak.
Yeah, and
now,
if you
look at most of them, it's, you know, it's not, okay, let's now interject the lesbian character, or now let's put in the gay character. Now it's the, you know, neon. Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. They're gay. They don't have to come out and go, hello, everybody, I am here.
Right. Right. And, you know, because there's so many, you know, it's just like classifying any subculture of people and pretending that they're all the same. They're not. Just because a man is gay does not necessarily mean that he's flamboyant. It doesn't necessarily mean that he's, you know, just, you know, like everybody else, or, you know, like nobody's the same. But there's so many within the gay community, there's so many subcultures of people showing or not showing their, quote, gayness in different ways. So it's kind of disturbing to see on television that just, you know, we're supposed to believe that all gay guys are just this one way.
Yeah, and for the biggest majority, when they show a lesbian female, she's almost always butch.
Yep.
But it's not necessary.
Yeah. You know,
if you're going to put that in, and I've become more and more of the attitude that they're jamming it down our throats. At least show a realistic view of homosexuality. I was watching a program the other night, and, well, I wasn't really watching it. I was actually doing work on my laptop, writing up an estimate, and I happened to look at the TV. I want to say it was Modern Family.
Mm-hmm.
They have, here's the guy that played Al Bundy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, him.
The show that he's on. And
yeah.
You know, here's
Ed O'Neill.
They have
Ed O'Neill. I had to throw that out there.
And yeah, and whatever the program is, his son is gay and has a gay life partner. And they portray them both as the just flamboyant. And it's like, okay, I get the point. They're gay. They don't have to both talk with the lisp, and they don't have to have that sweet tone and everything. And they don't have to do the, you know, the hand wave and all that bullshit. That's not. I have homosexual friends, and they don't act that way. But to watch TV, you would think that all of them are this way.
But the one thing that I will say for Modern Family, as far as those two characters go, is that they did make them, and what's so funny about them interacting is and being a couple is that they're two very different people. So it does make them a little bit more of a, I would say Modern Family does make their homosexual couple a little bit more of a realistic couple by having them be two different people, two opposite ends of the spectrum, and not just being, you know, two dancy, flashy gay guys who love musical theater dating each other. They're two very different characters, but still both are very flamboyant.
Yeah, and you are right. I did, and I think this is where TV actually caught everybody. It's kind of like a train wreck that you just can't look away.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, the more I sat there and looked at it, the more I was kind of drawn into it because, well, for me anyway, it's, this is so damn stupid. And like you said the other night, you were sitting there watching TV and you're going, why the hell am I watching this? It's like a damn train wreck. You know it's going bad, but you just can't look away.
Yeah. And well, I definitely never compare Modern Family to the Bad Girls Club. I'm going to give Modern Family a way, way higher rating as far as intelligence and production value and
everything. I can't comment on that one.
Yeah, but I really enjoy the show a lot. That being said, I've also watched 12 seasons of The Bad Girls Club, so cool.
Oh, hey, Aaron, real quick, what you were talking about was Joshua Jackson, who played Pacey Witter on Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, yeah, he did. Good old Jackson from the Mighty Ducks.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I love IMDb.
Yeah, Joshua Jackson. Kerr Smith played Jack McPhee. That's who he played.
Yes.
And this is, well, I hate to say it, but I think if they were to actually rewrite that today with today's producers, he'd probably run out instead of being in football uniform and everything. They'd put him in like a pink jersey or some bullshit.
Yeah. And I remember very specifically on the show, I remember the coach not wanting Jack to be openly gay because the reason he said was that the other team was going to target him.
Right.
Which is interesting. It gets you thinking, okay, well, does he not want an openly gay player on his team, or are they really going to target him? Because they might. And on that subject, though, I haven't got to say it any place public, but way to go, St. Louis Rams, for taking Michael Pham. Just wanted to say that. I'm pretty proud of that fact.
Well, not only that, way to go to Michael Sams for coming out and saying, I'm gay and I'm damn good at football. Get over it.
Yeah, and he put some pressure on the team, right? Doing coming out openly right before the draft. He really put some pressure on people. I'm not a huge football fan, but there's no doubt somebody would have given him the chance. But he definitely laid the extra pressure on. With that whole thing, and it's just really cool to watch a really good football player, you know, just because it's the manly American sport, and you know that's what men do, and they run into each other, and you know a gay guy would never do that. Because according to television, gay guys are all very flamboyant. And so it's, you know, to me it's just so cool because I'm thinking, wow, I haven't seen a gay football player since Kerr Smith on Dawson's Creek. So it's been a while. So it's nice to see an openly gay football player on my hometown team. I'm pretty proud of that.
Dude, I have gay friends that would whoop my ass without even blinking. Because they're...
Well, that wouldn't take much.
Shut up.
Girl Scouts that would whoop your ass.
Dude, those fuckers are strong, too. Don't let them fool you. Oh, yeah, I got cookies. No, I also have kung fu. Not that I ever tried to... But wait, that makes me sound bad that I tried to overtake a Girl Scout. No, that's wrong as well. All right,
Stop
I'm going to shut up now.
Stop now.
I'm going to shut up now.
Oh, are you trying to steal their cookies?
Hello, Mouse.
You intended it.
Yeah, hello, Mouse. Welcome, Foot.
Would you like a little extra salt in that Nike?
No, we're going bare toes on this one.
Oh. Okay. Now, Aaron, do you see why he and I get along so damn well?
I'm starting to get it, I think.
I'm not really ahead, and neither is he.
Dennis, I don't know if I told you or not, but for future conversation, but Aaron is also a very, very avid ghost hunter.
Yes. that is true. I am, yeah.
Well, then I will extend an open invitation to you as well, dear. If you end up on the East Coast and you're anywhere near Virginia, make sure to get in touch with me and... I've got several locations here that we can go have a blast.
Yeah, absolutely. But I am going to let you guys go.
Well, good timing because we're probably going to be cut off in a minute. So.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. I'm glad I was reminded and I got to call in. So definitely.
Your contributions to tonight's conversations has been fantastic.
Well, thank you. I try to converse well. Sometimes it doesn't work out, but I guess tonight it went okay. So. Well, thank you again.
No problem. And anything as far as this goes, or if you know, with suicide, mental health awareness, anything along those lines, I'll let you know what's going on. If you have anything that you want to promote, or anything that like a charity or foundation or something like that, just send me the info. I mean, you have my number and Facebook and all that stuff, so shoot me whatever, and I for sure will promote it.
Yeah, definitely. I'll do that. So thank you, guys. And, hopefully I'll be back on soon.
Looking forward to it. Ladies and gentlemen, Erin Marie Hogan, thank you so much for joining us, dear.
Thanks again.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
But, yeah, I have issues with today's TV. I don't know if it's the producers. I don't know if it's she brought up a great point. Has TV influenced society, or has society influenced TV? So, no telling, brother.
I think it's kind of soulless producers that just want to make something to put money in their pocket. If you notice, as far as, I'm going to use this as an example. You have, and as far as the singing shows go, you have The Voice, you have American Idol, you have America's Got Talent, you have, it's the same shit, different bag. And
I don't have a problem with the talent shows.
No, I do in a way. The reason I do is because for the general person that goes to walk into those shows, and this is actual truth behind the scenes, and you can Google it and find out. Truth behind the scenes is they've already pre-screened the people they're going to choose. For the ones that are not so good or horrible that they're going to make a fool of, they have them sign a contract saying that, you know what, you suck ass. Are you willing to basically humiliate yourself on air? Yeah, I am. Okay.
Yeah.
It's already predetermined. And that's where it gets to the selling their soul for, what, 5 minutes of fame? Hey, look, I was on TV. Look how jackass. Yeah, well, I got paid for it.
Yeah. Well, a lot of them don't get, most of them don't get paid.
Pretty much in the talent shows, anybody who's actually appears on TV and has their name on the bottom of the screen, they get paid. They have to.
All right. Well, on a totally different note, I'm anticipating the blog talk kicking us to the curb in a moment. On a totally
Correct.
Different note, in 12 minutes, it will be the date of 13th anniversary for 9/11.
This is true.
And on the thousands that have died, both on that day, as a result of that day, I'm going to stand silent for about 5 seconds, and it's in honor of them. And then I believe I will play us out. And do you have any issue with...
I got one for it.
Well, I think I have... I probably have the exact same thing that you're thinking. Messages to me.
Nope. We're totally off. I like mine better.
Yeah, we're totally different.
I like mine better.
Okay, I can do that. Let me see if I can find it.
No, I got it right here.
You ready? All right. Well, if you're queued up, then give me a moment, and I'll throw our plugs out. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us again for another what I think was fantastic episode of Full Spectrum Radio. If you're suffering from depression, if you're contemplating self-harm, if you think you're just not good enough, just remember, God put you here. God didn't put anything, anyone here that he didn't think was good enough. You are good enough. If at any point in time you feel less than that, by all means, send me a message. Send me a phone call. Send me a text. I will be here. Matt has already put his phone number out there. We will be here for you. On that note, yep. Keep in mind, you are loved. Everybody on this planet is loved by somebody. You are somebody's daughter, somebody's son, somebody's uncle, somebody's cousin. You don't have to get to the point where you just don't feel you belong here anymore. Everybody belongs here. God chose it that way. On that note, look us up.
I'm going to extend that a little bit just because of my friend Jennifer. You're also somebody's mother, somebody's father. And they're going to love you unconditionally.
Just remember, folks, there's somebody out there for you. Thank you for listening. I'm CPR Dennis.
I'm CPR Matt.
We'll be back here again next week. You can look us up on Facebook and Twitter at those names.
And again, if anybody is listening to it, you can feel free to reach me 24/7. Again, my personal cell phone is 331-251-4621. You can also, which goes directly to my phone, reach me my first and last name, matt.mazzebraiak@gmail.com, or at Facebook on CPR Matt, or Chicago Line Paranormal Researchers at the Life page. Send a message there. It goes directly to me. If you seriously need anything, contact me, and I'll see what I can do for you. So, anyway, Dennis, love you, brother. I will talk to you on the flip side. And where the hell did that go? What?
And this would be my why Matt doesn't normally run the board.
No, there it is. I apparently scrolled down too far and hit the wrong thing. Do you have it queued up?
No, sir.
All right. Well, closing sentiments, and while I bring it back up, I'm still learning this tablet, so you got to bear with me.
Take all the time you need, brother. We will definitely make it work. And
we have 6 minutes.
Perhaps. Well, I'm scrolling to find. I'm sure I will find it. But,
I know.
Ladies and gentlemen, it has been a fantastic show. Dude, it's not stored right. So I'm not sure where to find it. Do you remember what it was under?
Yeah, I got it.
Basketball.
I hope you're doing fine out there without me. 'Cause I'm not doing so good without you. We'll be right back. just as long as I have you right here by me. Could I?